the Around the League podcast. Works out with Ed Hockuley.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the League podcast. My name is Dan Hensis, and I am joined by a room full of heroes, Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal. What up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Mark is not here.
We're on a Sessler-less streak now.
Yeah, that's two. He is not the Cal Ripken of the podcast or the London Fletcher, if I were to use an NFL player, which would make more sense. Mark has some family matters he's tending to, but we're going to make it through this.
Yeah, I mean, we're surviving. It's raining here in Los Angeles.
What is this wet stuff?
I was.
It's the first time since you got here, Wes. Right.
I've never seen. Yeah.
I went to get food before we came in, and I just walked across to the huddle, and there were people huddling underneath, you know, the outdoors, waiting to go across, and they noticed I didn't have a jacket on or an umbrella, and they acted like I had just like traipsed through like Fallujah or something during a war. Like, it's like ridiculous.
They treat rain out here when I was in Georgia like if it would snow. Yeah. It was like major news. People would freak out. Nobody could drive. That's how people in LA treat rain.
People here are very weak when it comes to weather like that. Just try to drive in these conditions. People act as if it's, you know, 45 inches of a blizzard have come down upon the grounds. They don't know how to react to it at all.
Have you seen a thunderstorm out here yet?
Yes, maybe one in 3 years.
Wow.
It doesn't happen a lot. It's generally nice here, which is why it's not bad to live here. all right, fellas. We have a big show today, Wednesday show. We're going to talk about some of the biggest disappointments, player disappointments this season. Greg and I got a chance to chat with Brian Hartline, the Miami Dolphins wide receiver in studio. We'll give you that. We're going to introduce a new series, our Stick a Fork series. We'll get in that. But let's start, as we usually do, with K. Rich behind the glass, the news.
K-Rich,
Bonkers Sacks.
Bonkers.
What's up, K-Rich?
How you doing, boys?
Well.
I feel like I want you getting more excited when your theme music comes in, like a wrestler coming into the ring. Like
I don't know. I thought K-Rich was a little saucy there with her response, there, her intro today.
Yeah, I'm excited. You guys don't see this smile on my face. Big show today.
All right, so what's going on? What's in the news?
All right, big news day. Despite the Texans' recent quarterback woes, Matt Schaub will remain the starter and will be behind the center on Sunday against the Rams.
Gary Kubiak's paid him $29 million in the front office over the last 2 years. The last thing they want to do is bench him right now, if, you know, at all possible. He said it was a very tough decision, so he thought about it up until Wednesday. He was still thinking about it Tuesday, and that just says, you know, if there's another bad interception early against the Rams, I think we see TJ Yates, and then I think we see him as a starter.
We talked about his poor play going back to the end of last year, the Patriots game, and it's either a loss of confidence or a loss of arm strength. I saw a stat this week that was just incredible. On play-action passes, his average attempt is 3.8 yards.
Jeez. And that's the foundation of everything they do.
Right. And I believe previously his average attempt was 10 yards on play action passes. That's an incredible change. And it has to point to some kind of loss of confidence that he can't put a ball in a tight window or that he can't get the ball down the field.
And I think this Gary Kubiak quote during his news conference today spoke volumes. It was a tough decision, real tough. But I feel like it was the best thing for our football team this weekend. You know, that's a little strange to me to, you don't have to tell the media everything. You could have just said that Schaub's still our guy. We believe in him. Instead, he hemmed and hawed about starting the seventh round pick who stinks. Like, I was a little surprised.
If there truly is a confidence problem, that's not a booster.
He was like, well, I really wanted to start Schaub. He's been great for us. But have you guys watched him lately? That guy is rough.
And by the way, what is the situation that's going on? It's still a little unclear to me. I was upstairs. Greg and Wes, you were downstairs. There was a report last night that there were irate fans coming to the Matt Schaub home. But now Schaub has spoke out, and maybe it's not quite how it was originally told, the story.
You know, Matt Schaub says there have been people going by his house and taking pictures. Somehow his address got out, I think, through the local paper there. And they called the head of security. And I think that story, whether it was Texan security and eventually NFL security, that story eventually mushroomed to this radio report that got some facts off. I guess people weren't shouting obscenities at him. That's what Matt Schaub says. So it kind of set off everyone into their moralizing, like, how can fans do this? It's like, thanks. We know fans shouldn't go talk to. It's like, so, everyone's making the brave stand against fans being total jerks. Like, wow, great job by everyone.
So you're saying, like, Wally and the Birdman in the morning were wrong in their report last night?
It sounds like it. But to be honest, the story that it's confusing because the NFL head of security talked about it on the record to Ian Rappaport, and, you know, they've looked into it. So it was an issue, and I think something got confused along the way. But I think if nothing else, it's going to help Schaub get some fans in Houston. I think they'll support him this Sunday. I think they'll show that, hey, we're behind this guy at least initially and give him a big cheer.
Until the fifth pick six. Hey, what else is in the news, K-Rich?
All right, next up, I kind of want to whisper this one. Daniel Snyder defends Redskins' name in a letter to season ticket holders. I feel like this can go many different ways.
Okay, yeah. Well, the one thing I will say on this, I did write the post on the Around the League blog this morning. Snyder, who in the past has been very, he's been filled with vitriol on the issue. Back in May, USA Today asked him if they would ever change the name, and his response was never. You can use all caps on that. This time he wrote a letter that he sent to all season ticket holders in which he was very reserved. He was very nostalgic about going to the games with his father and how much the team name means to the city. You know, it's basically taking a new PR tact. Now, this would be the time where I would throw it to Chris Wessling, but I don't think Wes is even remotely capable of providing a response that won't end with him working for, you know, the lacrosse National Lacrosse League.
I have many strong feelings on this issue, but I don't want to get my Twitter inbox flooded with responses, so I'll pipe down.
Yeah. Why don't we, Greg, should we just move on?
A shadowy league figure is entering
the room.
Yeah,
he's actually coming into the room. He has very long fingernails. What else is in the news, K-Rich?
All right, we're warming up some leftovers on this one. Julio Jones expected to be out for the season, but Falcons will not trade their tight end, Tony G.
Tony G.
Wow.
You guys like that, right?
Yeah.
A little bit of swag, a little bit.
It does. The man doesn't need it. The guy is out of control.
Definitely
Wes.
Not.
The Falcons are done. And not only are they done, they missed their Super Bowl window. They are now a rebuilder, not a contender. Look at their roster right now with Julio out for the year, Roddy White hobbled, Steven Jackson injured, Sean Weatherspoon injured, Croy Bierman out. This is a 4-win roster.
Whoa. Could it have fallen apart? That I know, obviously Jones is
offensive
a stud,
line's
but
a wreck. Wide receiver core is a wreck. Running back core, awful. Defense, awful. This team is not good.
Are you saying, as a Jets fan, I can't take too much from Monday
I'm
night?
Saying Julio Jones was the best player on that team and one of the 20 best players in the NFL. The NFL is all about double teams, and when you take away the only guy on your offense who demands double teams, it changes everything. This would be like the Lions losing Calvin Johnson.
I hear you, but they've lost 4 games at the last second. If they win 3 of those, they're 4-1, and we're not saying that their season's done, and a lot of it just comes down to luck. I disagree about their window being closed for good, because their window to me is about Matt Ryan and the front office and Julio Jones, and Roddy White's still going to be around. That was really all that made the Falcons special to begin with.
I don't think their window's closed for good, but I think Dimitroff is going to have to pull off some magic next year in the form of draft picks and free agent signings or trades to get this roster back where it needs to be.
One thing with Gonzalez also, I feel like there's a slight disconnect, because you see in all the interviews, the only reason he came back was to win a Super Bowl. Now he's saying, you know, he came out and said that he loves Atlanta. He doesn't want to go anywhere. Wouldn't it make sense if all he wants to do is win a Super Bowl? I think the trade deadline's maybe in 3 weeks or so. If the Falcons could send him to a contender and get back a third round pick, who says no, and why should you say no? Why wouldn't Tony want to go to a Super Bowl team and the Falcons in a lost season get back a good draft pick?
He doesn't want to go learn a new system in the middle of the season, play with another quarterback who isn't going to throw to him when he's got two defenders on him. I mean, this
move
this,
your family. I mean,
right.
People forget their people.
Well, he never moved his family.
He's playing well right now because defenses are sending two guys to Julio Jones on every play. He didn't do anything the first 3 games. The next 2 games, the Patriots and the Jets stuck two guys on Julio Jones, and Gonzalez was more open.
Mike Smith, the Falcons have no interest in trading him anyways because he's the best player on their offense right now other than Matt Ryan, and they're still trying to win games. It's not like they're just going to wave the white flag, sorry, and give up on the season.
I don't think anybody is giving up a third-round pick for this iteration of Tony Gonzalez.
No, I agree.
Whatever, guys. Hey, what else is in the news? Anything else, K-Rich?
Yeah, we do have more. The players of the week were announced. And as a diehard Eagles fan, as all of our listeners know, I am very pleased to announce that DeSean Jackson was named Player of the Week in the NFC.
Whoa.
And also, Dan, this is for you.
Oh.
The quarterback for the New York Jets, Geno Smith, who looked like a real quarterback in the NFL.
Yes, he did.
Won Player of the Week.
Yes, he did.
In the NFC.
Yes, he did.
And that's the only reason why we're doing this Player of the Week thing, is just to let Dan enjoy the aroma of Geno Smith.
Well, I want to say this. Like, Greg, in his What We're Not Overreacting To piece on Tuesday, kind of painted me as, you know, the face of the buffoonish fan that goes up and down every week. But you know what? I don't profess myself to be some expert. I am a Jet fan that goes up and down, and I do feel that way. It's been a roller coaster with Geno Smith. And I will say this. First of all, he played a great game. 16 of 20, 199 yards, 3 touchdowns, some really good passes. And especially that last drive after the defense gave away a 13-point lead, he made 4 nice passes to get them into field goal range. I mean, this is a guy that he's really hard to figure out, but he's made this season for Jets fans fun. He's reinstilled hope for the franchise, and now I'm not saying hope like a Super Bowl run hope, but a hope that we're not going to be a laughing stock, that we actually could be fighting for a playoff spot in December. That's way more than I could have asked for. I'm excited.
Do you want a reason to be even more excited?
Yeah.
On deep throws, throws of 15 or more yards, Geno Smith leads the NFL in completion percentage and is tied for the NFL lead in completions. Mm.
That, yes, thank you, Carriage.
He's got a great arm, and he's great in the two-minute drill. You saw it at the end of the game, and you think, well, they should do that a little more. That's what they did at West Virginia. And I'm just excited to see you happy only one week after you broke out the M word, Matt Sims. I think you were talking about
it was literally
1 week ago that you said, I don't know what they're gonna do the rest of the season. I don't know if you can keep him out there as the starter. It's like,
well,
you know, you were talking about benching.
Wait a second. That speaks to my point, which was this guy's been a roller coaster. Before Monday, his previous game was in Tennessee. He was a train wreck. He turned the ball over 4 times. He could not hit the broadside of a barn. He was terrible. And now, you know, 8 days later, the guy is playing like a Pro Bowler. I can't figure it out, but I'm enjoying it while it's lasting. And, you know, you can't take this sunshine away from me.
One quick Craig. Point on DeSean Jackson before we move away. I'm doing for our Lenovo position ranks.
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
they just got a free plug. I mean, the podcast, we should charge for that.
I am doing wide receivers this week, and one of the things that's evident, and DeSean Jackson's the perfect example, how hard it is to evaluate one receiver in a system where maybe the system takes away from what he does best, whereas another system might accentuate what he does best. DeSean Jackson's playing better this year because of Chip Kelly's offense. And, you know, you have guys like Dwayne Bowe, who isn't playing well at all because Alex Smith refuses to throw downfield and outside the numbers.
And he's slow.
And maybe he's slower this year, too. You have Steve Smith, who is coming off a bad game, but looks to me like the same Steve Smith as last year. But Cam Newton isn't throwing accurately. Mike Shula's offense is hurting him. It's hard to evaluate wide receivers without including the system that they're in.
Wait, what does this have to do with the Jets? Oh, DeSean.
DeSean Jackson.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Way to pay attention, Greg.
No, I'm saying I thought it was coming back to the Jets.
No. That was
I thought you were going to bring it back to Jeremy Curley or all the superstars Clyde Gates that Geno Smith is somehow winning
There's
with.
Nothing to say about Clyde Gates.
By the way, and I've been very hard on Stephen Hill. He had 2 nice catches on that last drive. So good job, Stephen Hill. Good job by you. Anything else, K-Rich?
That is all.
Okay. All right, let's move on. I don't know if I said it in the intro, but we do want to talk about Thursday night football a little bit. We have the New York Giants who, as everyone that listens to the show knows, I have picked 5 weeks in a row to win. I am 0-5, which is probably keeping me out of first place, basically, the Giants alone. They are going to the Chicago Bears to I guess, keep their season alive is maybe an overstatement, but at least get some respect. Do we have any reason to think that the Giants are going to be competitive in prime time on Thursday?
I have no reason to think that. Did I see a stat this week that they are the first team in NFL history to allow 31 points in five straight games or the first five games of the season?
That's a little surprising, actually.
I think it was since the Chicago Cardinals or something like that. But, yes, they've been consistent.
A franchise that hasn't existed in 60-something years.
never a good sign.
We talk about the NFL like it's so unpredictable week to week, but the Giants have been one of the most consistent teams in the league. I mean, they've done the same thing every week. The way that they implode in the late third quarter and fourth quarter each week is unbelievable.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And now they don't have David Wilson. I don't know how much of a big loss that is, but
it's a big loss.
Whenever you see, it is actually a big loss, because especially when you see headlines like I saw on Twitter yesterday, Brandon Jacobs ready for a much bigger role. It's almost amazing to think.
Are they talking about his midsection?
It's amazing to think what is happening here. We are witnessing a complete dumpster fire for the Giants, and I'm going to finally pick against them this week, and I plan to do it a lot the rest of the season, but it's always subject to change, of course. But, I don't know. I'm just amazed by it. I never saw this coming, this wipeout of a season.
What does this season say about Jerry Reese and Thomas Dimitroff, who are considered two of the best general managers in football? They now have two of the worst rosters in football.
I think the Giants much more so, because they've been outscored by 100 points this season. The Falcons have gotten some bad breaks and a ton of injuries. The Giants are pretty much, I mean, they've had injuries on the offensive line, but I don't think they've been decimated as a team. So I think it says a lot more about Reese, because that defense, everything about the team is awful, right?
I agree, but I mean, I think Jerry Reese is a good general manager. I think Dimitroff is a good general manager. I'm just wondering, I don't think one offseason doesn't say these guys can't do it anymore.
We're all picking the Bears, it sounds like.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Of course. I mean, the Giants can't complete routine plays. You know, Eli Manning had three intentional groundings last week. I mean, Eli Manning was a big part of the problem last week. He's just throwing balls up there. I think he's getting more aggressive. He's starting to have that Phillip Rivers syndrome where he sees the rushers coming before they're even there. I mean, he is a big part of the problem.
And I guess the one question I have is, let's say this ends in a complete flame out, 2-14, 3-13. Who's held accountable? Is it just going to be a situation where the coordinators get wiped out? Or do you have GM unrest? Do you have coach unrest? Eli, I assume, is safe. But, you know, what would come next?
I was operating under the assumption that this was Coughlin's last year, but I guess.
I think Coughlin walks away after this. They'll never fire him. So even if he didn't want to walk away, that's how it will be painted publicly. But if this doesn't turn around, I think he walks away and they get a new coach.
Okay, let's move on. We had a post on the Around the League blog yesterday. I wrote it, so I'm very proud of it. But it was the 10 biggest disappointments in the season's first quarter. I will just quickly run down my list, and then I was just curious, Wes and Greg, your thoughts on it. Maybe someone that's not on the list that should have been, or someone who didn't deserve to be here. I have David Wilson of the Giants, Andy Dalton of the Bengals, C.J. Spiller of the Bills, J.P.P. of the Giants, Tavon Austin of the Rams, Mo Claiborne of the Cowboys, Cam Newton of the Panthers, Cortland Finnegan of the Rams, London Fletcher of the Redskins, and Eric Fisher, the number one pick of the Kansas City Chiefs. Thoughts?
I think that's a great list.
You helped me make it. So.
Yeah. I'm glad JPP was on there. I mean, he's been right up there. I saw Brent Celek blocking JPP about 20 yards down the field last week. I'm thinking, is he even trying?
Well, as I wrote in the post, beware of a professional athlete coming off back surgery, because you never know what that means. And usually it really messes with their whole system and their whole world. And it has to be this situation here.
Doesn't fill me with hope that Gronkowski will make a big impact right away.
Wait, so you helped with the list? I didn't know that. No teamwork is supposed to be allowed around the league.
This was a week ago. I forgot about it.
Yeah, I asked Wes. I was looking for a few defensive players, and he brought up, as an example, London Fletcher, who's actually, it's funny, Pro Football Focus, who, you know, a lot of people put a lot of stock into their ratings. He's ranked 49th out of 50, 3-4 inside linebackers. Cortland Finnegan is ranked the worst cornerback in the league right now. Now he's injured. But, I mean, these are guys that have been known as performers, and they've just dropped off the table.
You know, you could make this top 10 list solely running backs. And this kind of goes into the fantasy situation, too. You've got Maurice Jones-Drew, Ray Rice, Trent Richardson, David Wilson, Chris Johnson, Doug Martin, all averaging less than 3.5 yards per carry. You've got Stephen Ridley in a timeshare, averaging less than 4 yards per carry. C.J. Spiller, they're not using him the way Chan Gailey did, and he's not playing as well. And then you've got the Saints running backs who aren't running for anything right now. And I guess the one I would concentrate on is Trent Richardson, who you've had some fun at his expense. My Twitter page has had a lot of fun at his expense. And I went back, and I didn't watch all of his week 3 and 4 carries, but I watched everything he did against the Seahawks, and we talked about how they brought him in to run power. They can't do that. Every time they use a fullback in front of him, I think his average was under a yard per carry. When they spread the field, he averaged almost 5 yards per carry.
Hmm.
They can't run power behind that offensive line right now because there's no holes.
Well, they were facing Brandon Mebane and Red Bryant, very good defense. He did, I will say, he had a pretty signature run at the end of that game to kind of put the game away, broke some tackles. It was a 3rd and 6, something like that. So I thought, well, maybe there's something to build off. Then again, right after that, I think he had 3 straight 1-yard runs or something.
Right. I think they're going to have to rethink. I know they want to play defense and power running. They might have to rethink that, especially with their best player being a quarterback.
What does it say about the league that all these top running backs are struggling? I would almost think, just from a common sense perspective, if this is now a passing league, as they say, and guys are throwing the ball over the field, that would create an easier task for these high-level running backs, but instead it's the opposite. There's got to be something tying this together.
I don't know what it is. I wish I was smart.
Wes, come on.
I was smart enough to tell you.
I think we've seen a
lot of bad offensive line play this year.
You're no longer the Cliff Clavin of this group.
Don't say that. That's cruel.
I don't want to do wild speculation on something I'm ignorant.
I have a stat for you. At this point last year, 38 100-yard games from running backs. This year, 18 100-yard games. So, I mean, that's pretty dramatic.
Well, I think I do have a theory.
All right.
Wow. It only took you about 36 seconds. I like it.
We talked about I talked about this a couple weeks ago, about all of the great young defensive tackles in the NFL right now. You've got a lot of ferocious front sevens, and maybe teams are devoting more draft picks to their front sevens than they are to their safeties and cornerbacks.
Well, here's another thing. Passing's easier than running. It always has been. It always will be. I mean, that's why people talk about you got to run the ball. But it's at no point in NFL history has running the ball ever been more effective than passing the ball on a per-play basis. It's always easier. And now that you can spread the field and really get horizontal and the rules all favor the offense, it's just even more dramatic.
Here's another stab at a theory. So everybody spends their offseason working on the pass because they know it's a pass-heavy league now, and nobody really puts as much time into running plays and getting the running game orchestrated, moving well.
We got to get Chris B. Brown on this.
Yes, we do.
Greg, I didn't hear yours. What was your disappointment?
I'm going to go with Colin Kaepernick because I don't necessarily think he's played the worst of everyone I could come up with, but personally, after what I was thinking his season was going to be like after week one of the season, to think 4 weeks later, I'm kind of wondering, are the 49ers going to be able to throw the ball at all this year? This is a guy we talked about with unlimited ceiling, and the reality is he has not thrown the ball well for a month. And that it's a function of the whole team, but he hasn't either. He's missed throws. It's almost like he wasn't ready to really run that off. And I'm surprised. I'm more surprised and disappointed about him than any of the other young guys.
The disappointment to me with him is that they've turned him into Alex Smith.
Right, exactly. It's the whole thing. The whole passing game, I guess I could throw into this mix, Greg Roman, and just the whole 49ers passing attack.
They've decided he's not ready to be what he was at the end of last year with the way the surrounding talent is now.
You know what's funny also is that Sunday night game, which was obviously a easy win for the Niners against the Texans, but before his garbage time touchdown pass to Vernon Davis, he had thrown for about 60 yards in 3.5 quarters. That even Alex Smith was thrown for 120. You know what I'm saying? That's pretty weird.
Another stat from our research department. He only completed 6 passes in that game. That's the most for a winning quarterback that stayed in the whole game since? Let's try to guess. I bet you can guess it.
Alex Smith.
Tim Tebow.
Oh.
Tim Tebow. I think he had two completions in that win over the Chiefs that year. But that's the kind of company their offense and passing attack is keeping. Wow. 80 yards passing in a game, stuff like that.
All right, we have a special guest in the studio. He is the wide receiver for the Miami Dolphins. New contract and putting up his best numbers ever. Wide receiver Brian Hartline.
What's up, guys?
Whoa.
Introducing Miami Dolphins' very own Brian Hartline.
That is what you get when you come into our podcast.
Look at that beating heart. Hear that beating heart?
I don't
heart
even get the... K-Rich, what's with the beating heart?
Heartline, beating heart.
Oh.
Did you also hear the Dolphins in the background?
Absolutely. It felt like I was watching Ace Ventura.
I thought we loosened him up a bit.
I didn't even know that was coming. The Dolphin sounded like a five-year-old boy we hired.
It was, actually. That's how the NFL rolls.
That's kind of a dangerous area.
Yeah.
What's up, Brian?
Hey, man. Just having a great time out in L.A.
You were here early.
Yeah. First time out, too.
5:30 in the morning.
Yep.
Your week off.
Yeah.
The things we
do for the NFL, man.
Well, you were on NFL AM. That's why you were. It's not 5:30 in the morning
for all
our listeners here now. How did that go for you?
It was awesome. It was a blast. We had fun, TD. We were doing some shoot around with Candace, and we had a blast. I think I still won. We can go back and check the tapes. I think I'm pretty sure we still won. The score tracker wasn't right, but we'll be a gentleman about it.
It was quite a battle. I believe Candace went triple digits,
Candace
which is tough.
She did not. She went 99.
She went
90.
Oh, wow.
I thought so. Maybe I was wrong.
Greg, I'm on a first-name basis with Candace Parker. That's why.
I guess so.
We are very close friends. All right, Brian. So first thing I wanted to ask you about, you know, the Dolphins started out 3-0.
Yep.
Now you're 3-2. We have Dolphins fans in the office, including our colleague Handsome Hank, who I believe you spoke to with the Dave Damaschek football program.
Yep.
Is it fair to start being nervous if you're a Dolphins fan that this is same old Dolphins?
Oh, that's expected. I think that we've had a rough decade or so, I think, of Dolphins football, and that's understandable. We are realistic on where the past has been. But we're also realistic this is a whole new team, even from last year. We probably have every bit of probably 60% of our team's probably new. And, you know, we're embracing that. This is a whole new era, a whole new coaching staff. We're going about things in a different way. And we did give some games away. We're still trying to find our identity, I think, a little bit. We're trying to get the running game going. And really, I'm just speaking offensively. You know, there's some things that we want to get better at. There's things that we're doing well that we want to continue to do better at. But it's good that week 6 for us was our bye, because this gives you a chance to do a little self-evaluation and really get ready to hunker down for the next 11 games. So it can be a blessing in disguise.
Feels like every game is close with the Dolphins.
Yeah. You know, that's – yes, it is. And I hope we can get out of that routine. You know, we're proud of that, though. We're going to make every game come down to the fourth quarter. We're going to pride ourselves on that, and we're going to finish games better than we have in the past. So of late, I should say. And we take care of the football, number one, take care of our quarterback, number two, and we're a hard team to beat.
One thing I was curious about, you know, Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, RG3, these are all quarterbacks that came into the league last year. They're seen as the new guard, the future. Your quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, while there are people that are big defenders, including my colleague Greg, who is basically
a
fanboy almost. Let's be fair, Greg.
I just said, from the beginning, thought he was right there with those other guys.
How come Tannehill doesn't get mentioned with those guys when those conversations happen?
People have a fascination or a fixation with instant gratification, and that's what we've grown to be accustomed to. I feel like there's a lot of offenses, and I'm very passionate about how I feel about certain things, but this is one of them. I think that, you know, people see instant change or the read option or, you know, things that are quick fixes that help people win football games. And they come inebriated by it. They love them. They think they're the God, the savior. And people need to understand that everything happens for a reason. And that if these players that, God forbid, they do an excellent job, and they stay at the pace they're at where they were their rookie year, they will break every record known to man. So that's not going to happen. I mean, there's guys that take different paths. So, you know, you listed off a handful of guys. You probably could pick two or three that more than likely will begin to decline throughout their career. And there'll be some you did not mention that are becoming to incline. Whether it be like, and unfortunately, this guy's getting hurt. You see a Brian Hoyer trying to emerge, and then he got hurt. Or you see, you know, your Geno Smith. You see your E.J. Manning. So you have guys that are there that aren't you know, quote unquote name guys yet. They're still earning their right, but that's how they become so good. Guys that come so easy to them, sometimes, I'm not saying always, sometimes, then you start to decline around them. So, around them and themselves. So, and I don't think Ryan's one of those guys. I can't wait to see what Ryan is at the end of this year, let alone in 2 or 3 years. And, you know, he's a great guy. He works hard and he wants to be great. So, and anytime you got that kind of combination, it can be pretty encouraging.
Well, it does seem like he's improving this year. What do you see different out of him and the offense in general now in year two under Mike Sherman?
You know, he's able to be more of himself, because as a rookie, you get so you're worried about stepping on toes. You get so worried about, you know, you really want to voice your opinion, but you don't have that foundation yet. And he understood that. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm just saying that he didn't feel as comfortable, I think, you know, telling an 8-year vet to, you know, to get his stuff together, you know, kind of thing. So, or a lineman or whatnot. So he was really just worried about his game. At this point, he's got such a handle, I think, on the offense and what we're trying to accomplish, and really he's had it since college too, that he's able to reach out and really try to help other people, you know, help their craft or what he kind of wants from people. And, hey, I know we have a 12-yard hook, but if we have this, you know, expect the ball here. So it's growing. It takes time. And again, he can be himself, and at times people get out of line, he's able to kind of chew people out. And that's needed if you want to have success in this league.
Last thing for you. How has fantasy football and Twitter changed your relationship with fans?
It stresses the relationship. you know what? And it's so humbling too, because we bring up, oh, the fans think, oh, it's the same old Dolphins, right? So we had a couple losses. I get immediately, I'm like, oh, well, I'm off social media for about a week or two. Right. That's my initial thought. Let alone fantasy football. So, but then again, and then I got on Twitter and I was amazed and astonished and really, you know, humbled by how great the Dolphins fans have been lately. You still always have your naysayers. You still always see them, which is fine. But the amount of support we have from the Dolphins fans, either throughout the country, the world, especially in South Florida, has exponentially grown. So, you know, credit to them. They're doing a great job. They're filling our stadium. They're getting loud. And we love that. We know it helps us. It juices us up. And but yeah, it does stress the relationship. There's times where I win games and I'm like, gosh, I had what? I probably shouldn't get on social media. And we just won the game. I'm like, gosh. So, you know, I understand it. It gives them purpose. It makes every game so enjoyable. Even when you're losing, it's like, oh, we're losing. Well, hopefully, you know, they're going to throw for 400 yards and my guy's going to get some touchdowns, and it makes it worthwhile. So it's changing the NFL, but it does put an added stress from the player or athlete to fan relationship.
All right, Brian, thanks. I know you're very busy. You're going through the Culver City car wash. Good luck the rest of the season. Stay healthy and go to
Appreciate Albans. It. It's a blast.
Thanks, Brian,
thanks, guys.
All right, so we have a new segment. It is it's a kind of a new old segment, the Stick a Fork in 'em series, which we ran last year on Around the League. That was a Greg Rosenthal invention where we... Greg, why don't you explain, what is the Stick a Fork in 'em series?
Well, it's just when we decide that a team has no chance to make the playoffs, that we're saying their season is over, they're playing for next year. It's obviously not mathematically eliminated, but we try to be careful. We're not going to get any wrong this year. It's supposed to be 100% success rate.
We famously... world famously got the Redskins wrong last year, but
no one's going to remember that. You don't have to tell people about
listen,
this.
Society needs to know, but the point of the matter is that's it. That was kind of like we were getting our feet wet. Now we will roll forward from here until eternity, never get one wrong. And so let's start with our first entry to the Stick a Fork series 2013. Okay, Rich. Here lies the 2013 Jacksonville Jaguars, who passed away peacefully on October 6th after an extended trip to the Gabbard Zone. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be made to the Gus Bradley Self-Esteem Fund. Guys.
This is the, I don't know why I know this. This is the first team since the 1986 Giants to lose all five of their first five games by at least 10 points.
That's wow. A lot.
They have never been in a game this year.
If you love random, probably useless stats that will not impress your girlfriend, this has been the podcast for you today.
Hey, which is why I do not have a girlfriend.
What can you say about the Jaguars? Listen, they have...
We're not exactly going out on a limb here.
Yeah, this obviously they're going to get tougher as the year goes along. frankly, we should have stuck a fork in them in week three, but we forgot to start this until now, so that explains why. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have many playmakers. They have some parts on defense, but really not much there either.
I don't think – what parts do they have?
I don't know.
You're just trying to give them some credit.
I'm trying to give them something. I mean, they used to have a nice set of bookend tackles, but now Eugene Monroe's in Baltimore and Luke Jokel's on IR. This is potentially one of the worst teams in football history.
The only reason for me to follow this team the rest of the year is to see if Maurice Jones-Drew and Paul Posluszny and Mercedes Lewis and even Uche Nwaneri get traded.
Bless you.
David Caldwell has said he's not actively shopping these guys, which is code for if you call me, you can have him for the right price because I want draft picks.
What's good about the Jaguars? I mean, looking to next year, what can they feel like this is something, even if it's small, to build on?
I can only think of one thing. Justin Blackmon and Cecil Shorts are two good receivers.
That's something. Jonathan Cyprian might be okay
in
the long
Cyprian
run.
Might be okay.
Might be pretty good.
I would say the one maybe good thing is in 7 years when we have the Shad Khan of football life, he could point to this season as the year it all changed.
7 years?
Yeah.
For a football
Well, they'll have four rings by that time.
They're going to turn it around in 3 years with only two good players on their team?
I have a Sessler. They will be four-time Super Bowl champions in 7 years.
That's all you had to say?
And this will be seen as the rock-bottom moment where, you know, you go, let's say they win one game. I would think they'll probably win one, but at this rate, who knows? And it's just a matter of they need to get out of this Gabbert zone for good, and maybe they get a good – if they get Teddy Bridgewater or another quarterback that turns out to be really good. We've seen it a million times. We saw it with the Colts. Things can turn around quickly.
We saw it with the Lions. But that Lions team wasn't nearly as bad as this Jaguars team, I think, you know, projects to be, because it's rare to have a team that's the worst in the league on offense and might just be the worst in the league on defense. To match those two up together just creates a lot of excitement in Jacksonville.
The Lions have back-to-back number one overall draft picks and hit on two very valuable players. You don't have a Ndamukong Suh come out every year at number one overall.
And we can't really get into too much in the way of details when it comes to Las Vegas, but Vegas doesn't have a lot of faith that the Jaguars will get off the schneid against the Denver Broncos on Sunday.
What is this Vegas you speak of?
I don't know.
So do we think they win? What's your win total for them now? It was probably around 3 or 4 to start the year, 2 or 3. I don't remember.
I had them at 3 personally. I think they'll squeeze out 1, but that could be generous.
I'm going 0.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah.
Look, you don't deserve for us to guess that you're going to have a win when you say every week that Blaine Gabbert's our quarterback.
Well, I assume this
you're not even
be,
trying. Josh Freeman's out there. You don't want him. You're punting the season. We see through that. I don't want to give you a win.
My instinct is to say 2 because just almost every team falls into 2 wins. But this is one of those uniquely awful teams that I think it smells like a 1-15 team. They'll find a way to beat Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Titans.
Right.
Something will happen.
All you need to do is have one Chad Henne turn back the clock game, and you got your victory. But they
turn back the clock to when? 2012, I guess.
You know, he had his moments in Miami. Sorry, Jaguars, it's over for you. We've made the decision. You might as well not even show up anymore because your season's over.
Oh, we forgot one other asset. They have a third-round punter on their team.
He's a good one, too.
Yes.
He's very good.
They passed up Russell Wilson for him.
That was not smart. Next week, we'll add another team to the Stick a Fork in Them series. You don't want it to be your team, so you better win this weekend. And that is it for the podcast today. We'll be back Friday. We'll talk about the Thursday night football game. We'll look forward to the rest of the Week 6 action.
Daniel Jeremiah action on Friday.
Right. DJ,
Sticks.
We move the Sticks will be here. I will not be here. I will be flying back to New York. I have some family business myself. I leave it in your capable hands, fellas. He has more football knowledge than me.
Than all of us.
He actually has more. He might even have me beat in Saved by the Bell knowledge, which that's what I'm really upset about
so
missing.
He's a Renaissance man.
He is. Thanks to Brian Hartline for coming into the studio. This is Dan Hanza signing off for the mailman, the boss, K-Rich behind the glass, and of course, Lyle the intern. Until Friday.